It's Tuesday, July 17th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hey, folks, got a great show lined up for you tonight. Really do. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast. My name is Todd Cochran, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island here in Honolulu, Hawaii. How's everyone? Well, I tell you what, had a very, very productive weekend, had a very productive day back at work, and I'm sure all of you are enjoying your summer months. I know that we are here, and just like anything else, we're all outside during the weekends. This weekend, my lovely wife and I, we spent the weekend in the minivan. We were driving all over looking at homes, and yes, the house hunt, I think, is almost complete. We found three really good ones, and so I was going to discuss it with her tonight on, okay, baby, which one do you want? And I came home, and she was on the couch and sick as a dog. And there's been this, like this 12-hour flu or 24-hour flu that's been going around, and I've been kind of shucking and jiving and just missing it. And my son had it yesterday. He kind of complained of his stomach hurting, and he really didn't have a full blower, but my youngest one has already went through it. So the only two that have escaped it so far is my 11-year-old and me. So we're going to knock on wood. Hopefully we'll avoid it. But so tonight I had to take a little extra time and take care of everything for the kids. And she's recuperating. And hopefully by tomorrow she'll be back on her feet and we'll be able to make a decision on the house hunting. But hey, I want to take a few moments here. Of course, I want to thank all of our long-term subscribers to the show. I want to thank you for being part of the Ohana here, being part of the family. And if you're checking out the show for the very first time, I want to encourage you to get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, click on the podcast link on the website. That'll take you to where all the podcasts are archived. And you can go back and check out, I think we're at 286 shows or something like that. I think tonight is number 286. But I don't know, maybe we're 287. I didn't even check the number. But anyway, a lot of content there that you can go back and look through. And, of course, you can subscribe to our newsletter. You can find that via the top of the website in the third column. That will get you the show notes of every site that I talk about during the show, delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. And because I'm recording this show here in Honolulu, for those of you that definitely live east of me, or if you live in the lower 48, or if you are in other parts of the world, you have the show notes delivered almost first thing in the morning when you get up, so you'll have those available to you. And it's a great service for us to be able to provide that links to you, and we hope that you'll get subscribed to the newsletter. Okay, well, I got a couple of things I want to talk about real quick here first. First things first, I guess, is we closed nominations down at 23:59. Actually, it went a little over last night because I was having a essentially a little bit of a cookout with my next-door neighbor and my developer. He was having a few problems, and I had to manually go in and flip the switch about an hour after, you know, it was about 0100 when the nominations got shut down. But the we're basically taking anything after midnight, and those will be tossed anyway. But here are some quick facts for 2007 on a number of nominations. We had 335,000. It was actually, I think, 335,121. I've got the official number on Podcast Connect, but over 335,000 people submitted over 6 million nominations. This breaks last year records by just a huge number. And I think the thing that amazes me here is last year we let people, you know, essentially renominate shows on a daily basis. But this year we said, okay, well, you get one shot at it. And we had some pretty stringent checking going on. And there was a high number of nominations that are essentially disqualified because people attempted to duplicate, submit, and so forth. But we expect when we get I got a team now of around 40 listeners that are going to be spending the next 5, 7, maybe even up to 10 days poring over the nominations and getting ready to announce a slate of shows. So if everything goes right, we'll have approximately 200 shows that are going to make the slate this time. And we're expecting in the voting phase to have over 5 million page views during the voting period. So I'm I'm a little bit nervous. I don't know how the server is going to do. I really don't. We did server did well during the nomination phase, and only time will tell. I guess what will happen. But I don't know if during the last show or not. But Heil Sound came on board as a sponsor, so we're now going to be giving. This is our third year, and they've promised to give us two Heil PR40 microphones. And those will be shipped out to us here directly. So the top two winners in People's Choice and Best Producer are going to be getting some very, very nice Ohio microphones. Hey, I want to welcome Angelo. Angelo is our developer of Raw Voice. He's actually watching tonight on MyLifeOnline.tv. And he's dealing with a smelly situation at his house. he just instant messaged me just before we started. He says, I am wide awake. And I'm like, well, what's going on? It's like 2:30 in the morning there. He says, my dog got sprayed by a skunk. Well, Angelo, the only hope there is give him a bath and then put him outside. Oh, my goodness. Yes, you will have a stinky dog for a few days. And my mom's dogs get sprayed once in a while. They just say it's just a fact. You live near the country. Your dogs are going to get it from time to time. Dogs and skunks don't quite match up. Hey, I've got a couple ideas I've been kicking around, and I don't know if I want to do this or not. I don't know why, but it kind of occurred to me in the shower. Does everyone have these epiphanies while they're in the shower and think, would that be a good promo to do? I'm thinking at some point here in the near future to do a 24-hour round-the-clock continuous podcast. Essentially, it would be a broadcast / podcast. And the goal would be to have someone on every hour. And I would do 24 hours straight in front of the microphone. Now, I don't know. It's been a while since I did a full 24-hour deal, but I think it might be a lot of fun. Now the question would be: would we be able to line up enough people to interview over the 24-hour period? What do y'all think? Think that would be fun? Would you tune in for a few hours while we were doing it? Would you download the media after it was put up if we had enough compelling content? That's a lot of content to do in a 24-hour period, but. I'm considering it, and if so, we'll talk about it a little more in the near future. We'll promo it a little bit, and I'll keep you advised on kind of my plans. If you've got some ideas, definitely send me some email at geeknews@gmail.com. I do want to wish one of my long-term, it's basically, those of you may or may not know, but Derek Miller is the podcast creator of penmachine.com. He's over at penmachine.com. Derek has provided music to the show. He's a long-term fan of the show. Derek, and I've been following what's been going on in his blog, and I really didn't talk about it too much in the show up until I thought it was a good time to do that tonight. But Derek is right now in the fight for his life. He's had some very serious surgery over some cancer that he has had. And I'm going to have a link up to his blog in the show notes tonight and a link to his father's blog as well. They've been covering the everything that's been going on. He's been not necessarily live blogging. His father has been quite a little bit. But Derek's a great artist, and I'm going to be, at the end of the show tonight, I'm going to be playing some of his music. So I would recommend that all of you get over to his website, and if you want to support Derek, you know, pick up one of his CDs. I think that in this time when a person is, you know, in a struggle for one's life and definitely facing one of those hurdles in the road that is a big challenge, the more we can support him. You know, even if you just get over to his blog and wish him well, I'd appreciate it. And I've sent Derek an email and also posted on his blog site that, of course, Shoko and I and the family here have him in our thoughts and prayers and hope him a speedy recovery. And I'm fully confident that his fight with cancer is going to be successful here. But again, penmachine.com is his main website. And I want to thank Tom Newman over at Fogview Podcast. He sent me an actual voicemail tonight, and it's kind of what prompted me to go ahead and say something at this point in the game. But Tom, thanks for your comment. I'll probably play your comment at the end of the show, but definitely appreciate it. But okay, let's move on, and again, we'll play some of Derek's music at the end of the show. I think you'll enjoy it for sure. All right, what else have I got listed here? I think that's all I've got for kind of announcements tonight. And we are, excuse me, still ramping up, of course, for our next roundtable over at techpodcast.com. We're looking to have that happen here at the end of the month. So we're looking for some content. If you are a content creator, or not a content creator, but if you have a technical product that you would like to have reviewed, drop me a line, geeknews@gmail.com, and we're going to be having a live event on the 28th of July. So look forward to having that live event, of course, sponsored by GoToMeeting. And these days, whether you're in business or simply want to share something with friends or family, email, voicemail sometimes just isn't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, a web conferencing solution that will revolutionize how you can communicate with your business associates, family, and friends. Unlimited meetings for one flat rate means you can meet as often as you want for as long as you need. Try it yourself for free for 30 days. Just visit gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. All right, let's see what I've got in the list here of stuff. And I think the first thing I want to talk about on the tech side is an article series that I found that was actually published earlier in the week, and I don't remember talking about this before, and I'm positive that this hasn't come up, but for those of you that have Verizon's Fios service, did you know that when Verizon has been doing your installs, that they've been ripping out the copper in your homes, or they've been removing the old copper? So if you don't want the Fios service anymore, in order to have your old, telephones turned back on the old copper system, it's essentially not possible. And supposedly, there is a clause in your agreement that states that you are fully aware of that. Now, here is the concern I have for all of you. If you have the Fios service and you are in a home that you think that you're going to flip at some point, you're going to stay in it for 2 or 3 years and sell it, if they've ripped out the copper, it's going to be a big pain for the new owners, if they're not internet junkies, to get the old service installed. And there's no guarantee that the copper will ever be able to be put back in. Now, part of this has to do with that copper these days is not number one, becoming very, very expensive. It's, I think, $3.27 a pound or something like that. That's what the cost of it is. But they are also, at the same time, by putting in fiber to your home, they're essentially, the rules are different. They don't have to share those fiber lines with any of the competitors. So you essentially are locked in to Verizon. You can't move because no other service provider would be able to come in and provide you service because the copper is gone and Verizon doesn't have to share. So please be aware of that. Some people are starting to find that out. What people are finding is that it takes a lot of screaming in order to get the copper back in. And so be very, very careful when you sign up for the service that you fully understand that they are more than likely going to be pulling the fiber. And that means physically pulling it out of the ground. And they just go to the end where it comes into your property and they hook it and they pull it out. And some are even saying that they're actually using the existing copper to get the fiber in. So they're tying it off, cutting it, pulling the copper through to bring the fiber into the home instead of digging up your yard. So that's the thing I want you to make you all aware of. And it makes sense. In the cheapest way, they don't have to come in with a digger and dig up the yard to drop the fiber in. You know, they just they pull it through. Fiber's cheap, so what if they ruin a portion of the line? That, you know, they cut it and put new ends on it, and they're good to go. It's not a hard thing to deal with here, but kind of a sad situation. Hey, I want to take a few minutes, of course, and thank GoDaddy for being a sponsor here at the Geek News Central podcast. And domain names from GoDaddy are up to 70% less than the competition. Plus, each domain includes free hosting, a website builder, a free blog, complete email, and much, much more. Plus, enter the code TODD when you check out and save an additional 10% on your order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Again, here's some other codes. You can use Geek5 to get 15% off your order of $20 or more. Pod58 is a great one if you're picking up a hosting account. A whole plethora of hosting codes. You can find those via the link blog at Geek News Central. And thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here at the Geek News Central podcast. There's an article over on Mark Cuban's weblog talking about remembering broadcast.com. And boy, how does time fly when everyone's having fun. And it was only 8 years ago that broadcast.com went public. And according to Mark, that was the biggest first day jump in stock price in IPO history. And he made a lot of money on that IPO, definitely made a pile. But what the thing that, you know, we all know that prior history, but I think the thing that I found very interesting here was that he dug out the PowerPoints from their initial public offering roadshow that they use to present to potential investors. And it goes, it's a 45-slide slideshow, but really insightful. It really, really is. So any of you that are entrepreneurs and, you know, maybe in a business that's looking at IPO or even want some ideas on, you know, a quality presentation that was put forth to investors, this may be very worth your time to go and take a look at. I'll have it up on the link blog, of course. Those of you that are looking to expand your education a little bit, did you realize that MIT has open courseware? You know, this is a great way to get access to some of MIT's instructional material, and you can essentially teach yourself almost online. Now, you know, you're not going to get, unless you pay them, you're not going to get credited for the courses or anything, but at least you'll be able to get access to the MIT digital repository, and you'll be able to look at what they have, and you look at some additional resources that they've made available online. So I'll put a link up to this, and I think it's pretty cool because, you know, if you're into aeronautics or if you're into mathematics or music and arts or physics or compared to media, it's all on here. They've got a whole bunch of stuff available that you can access online. I'll have this linked up. And you know, nothing like being able to get an education from MIT for free. too bad the credit hours didn't count, that's for sure. All right, announcement over on Torrent Freak. They're saying that there's a new application out there called Zip Torrents. Apparently, this Zip Torrent application is made by, and as they place it, they're saying it's been allegedly created by our friends from the anti-piracy organization Media Defender. So what this application does is it goes out to sites that have media, and it feeds fake packets. So it essentially sends you bad data. And it's saying that this this ZipTorrent application is really causing some issues. Now, they're fighting back in a big, big way on the torrent sites. They're publishing a list of IPs that people should be blocking, and they're adding to those every day. But one thing, and I think it's very interesting about the what it says on the Media Defender website, it says, decoying and spoofing are the most commonly known techniques that we employ. We send blank files and data noise that look exactly like a real response to an initiated search request for a particular title. Now, here's the other worry. If you get connected up on a torrent stream that's got one of these zip torrent applications running, you can almost be guaranteed that your IP is being registered. And while I'm sure you're, you don't necessarily want the MPAA to be registering your IP, this company supposedly, as they're being claimed by Torrent Freak, is this application's been, you know, created by quote unquote their friends from the anti-piracy organization Media Defender. So be aware, and we'll see what happens with this. But this is the first I've heard about this. But I guess it's pretty prevalent right now. And there's a link within the reference article that talk about, you know, what's going on here, how you can identify it, how you can find it within your specific clients, and essentially block it and report back to them on these IP list. All right, many people ask me all the time, they say, Todd, man, how do you do it? How do you continue to go with the schedule that you have? How do you survive? How, you know, and those of you that are longtime listeners to the show know I'm going to school. I have a job. I do two podcasts a week. I'm very actively involved in building out a company, and plus all the other stuff that happens, plus being married, having three children here at home, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Just, you know, the typical stuff that life throws at us. And I tell people I don't sleep very much. Generally, and I have slipped a little bit here in the last couple of years, but generally I sleep 4 to 5 hours a night. And people say, oh, I can never get away with that. I have to have 8 hours of sleep. It's futile. I can't go any further with that. Well, there's a great article on time.com that I think is just, it's right up my alley. And I wish I could, you know, maybe I'll get to a point here in October when I leave the Navy where I can be on my own schedule, where I can try this experiment. And I don't know, I may really try this. And the article starts out by saying sleep is just a bad habit. And this gentleman, and I'm going to probably destroy this, but it's called Dymaxion. Dymaxion sleep is a sleep habit that essentially what it boils down to is if you are working and all of a sudden you start to feel yourself become a little fatigued, what you do is you immediately lay down and take 30 minutes. You get a 30-minute, what I like to call 30-minute combat nap. And then after that 30 minutes, you get right up and you continue to work again as if you had slept all night. And you work until the point where you start to feel tired again. And you go take another 30-minute combat nap. Now, they're saying that if you have a flexible enough schedule to be able to do this, that you are very easily able to get on a essentially a 2 hour per night sleep schedule. Now, some people say it's impossible, but what this guy did, he did this for 2 years. He was able to work for 2 years and essentially go on as little as 2 hours sleep a day. And he allegedly says is that it was the most vigorous and alert condition that he had ever enjoyed in his entire life. Now, he had doctors who were looking after him and psychiatrists and the whole nine yards. And they said, hey, he was, you know, looks like he was good to go. It didn't affect him. So if you can, you know, if you have a flexible life cycle and you want to eliminate downtime, you know, this might be something to look at. I'd be willing to try it. I've always said, boy, I wish I could clone myself and get more hours out of the day. I don't know. I don't know how it would be. I'm sure some people could do it, and some people probably would be impossible to do that. Great article. Next up, next article over on Ars Technica talking how about the RIAA spends thousands of dollars to tame small judgments. And it just goes to show their veracity in going after someone. And a key component here was a gal that was out of North Carolina who actually had them come after her in 2005. And she, wanting to defend her innocence, immediately contacted a lawyer. And I don't know how much she ended up paying the lawyer back and forth. That's the thing that they don't say here in this article. But communications between her attorney and the RIAA ended up in her only paying a $300 penalty back to the RIAA without admitting guilt and some of the other clauses that they make people sign. But they calculated in this the massive amount of money that the RIAA must have spent on this to get that $300. So it goes to show you that they, they're willing to spend the money to do that. Now, I've got a little boy that is very upset and sounds like he needs his dad for a minute. I'm going to take a podcast timeout. I'll be right back. All right, I'm back. Well, with with the advent of the pause key and lives that can be, I can leave. And with my wife not feeling well, I definitely had to tend to that. So, all right, you guys didn't miss me anyway, right? Okay. All right, we talked about on the last show how internet radio, I guess this is my time for a little bit of soapbox here. We talked about on the last show how internet radio was essentially saved this prior weekend by the Sound Exchange, essentially delaying the implementation of the new rules. And I wrote an article on my website about this, and the more I think about it, the more I'm wondering if this was not the biggest smoke and mirrors thing that they have ever pulled off. So follow along with me here for a few minutes. So back in, I guess, January, the Copyright Board decides that they're going to implement this new rate structure with the advice of the Sound Exchange. You tell them, okay, we want these folks to pay $500 per radio stream, and we want them to pay X number of dollars per listener. And, you know, there was all these fees that were essentially amounted to those streaming sites, you know, essentially becoming non-viable. It was definitely going to kill a lot of the websites out there. A lot of them said, we're going to shut down. We're not going to be able to survive this. So the Sound Exchange knew that this was going to cause a huge, huge uproar. They knew people would be fighting it tooth and nail, right? So I think what the Sound Exchange did was roll the dice. They said, okay, let's go ahead and continue on here and see where they go with this on court and with the Congress and see if they get any relief from that aspect. Well, seeing that they weren't going to get any relief and all these sites were going to go off the air, which in the long run is not that is not good for the Sound Exchange, because it would have removed some revenue that they would have already been getting. So on Friday they says, "Oh, okay, we're gonna delay the implementation of the new rates, and you know we're gonna go back to essentially the discussion table." Well, In a statement made by the Sound Exchange, this was after the temporary compromise broke, the Sound Exchange distributed a press release that characterized its compromise offer. And the folks over at Ars Technica have taken a segment of that, and I want to read this to you. Sound Exchange has offered to cap the $500 per channel minimum fee at $50,000 per year. Four webcasters who agree to provide more detailed reporting of the music they play and work to stop users from engaging in stream ripping, turning internet radio performance into a digital music library. Okay, what does that mean, folks? Well, that means that the Sound Exchange has offered to cap the channel limit at $50,000 per year for these big stations, and it's only going to be, you know, they're not going to make people pay a whole bunch of money. Now that doesn't say if you've got five stations, you're still going to have to pay $2,500, and you're up to $50,000. But they're going to work with the webcasters who agree to provide more detailed reporting, and those that stop users from engaging in stream ripping. This is what I think right there. Stop users from engaging in stream ripping is the key component of what maybe the Sound Exchange was holding in reserve as a smoke and mirrors type thing and saying, oh, well, you want lower rates, you're going to have to put DRM in your media streams. So, you know, for years, people have been very easily able to go and capture video streams or audio streams that have been coming down from these services and, you know, make digital performances out of them. They've been able to, you know, make media that they've been able to share. And even though the quality sucks, now you think about it, a streaming audio does not have as good a quality as what you're going to get from ripping a CD. It's just not, because, you know, they limit the amount of bandwidth. They're trying to, because bandwidth costs money. So they, you know, the bit rate's lower, and you're not getting a performance that is quote unquote what I would consider rippable quality. Now, it might be something where you will rip it and go listen to it later, because that's what a lot of people do with a lot of the talk radio shows that are on streams. So here they are. They want DRM engaged, DRM embedded in streams, audio streams. So that tells me that all along they've been planning this, and they very well knew that, you know, they were going to get people one way or the other. And this to me is pretty dirty play. It's something that we have to continue to fight. And I don't think the days of internet radio are any more secure than they were last week. I think ultimately a lot of people or a lot of companies are going to go out of business, because if they're required to stop users from engaging in stream ripping, then that's going to cost them money. And if they don't have the money to put that technology in place or license it from a company at an affordable fee, you know, they're going to be gone. Either that, or they're going to be paying this big, huge money that the copyright board decided upon. We will see how this plays out, but that's kind of my prediction, and that's kind of my thought process on this as well. Hey, do want to talk real quick on a subject here that I've had some time today to think about this. This morning, I woke to a barrage of email from podcasters and people in the podcasting space asking me about this new association of Download Media, a.k.a. ADAM or ADM. And I was caught by surprise because I had not heard about this up until today. So I made a couple of calls and talked to one of the founders of the organization. And she reassured me that they were in early startup phase on this, and that this was going to be open to anyone. And while I understand there's a, you know, there's a desire by this group to essentially establish the metric systems for podcast downloads as far as it goes to being a reportable media and having a set standard, while I understand the goals in that are lofty, I'm very, very concerned that the organization is going to be driven from the top down. In other words, you're going to have, you know, a number of companies that are going to probably try to drive the agenda there. I don't know how this thing's going to be organized and what the voting structure is going to be involved. Tentatively, I'm saying that, you know, probably I and Raw Voice will be involved. But at the same time, I'm really, you know, these types of organizations can serve some better than others. And I think in the long run, so long as you, the listeners, are taken care of, in other words, your best interests are looked out for, and so long as podcasters' best interests are looked out for, I think it's okay. You know, I do kind of have a question on, you know, why are we trying to reinvent the wheel here at this point in the game? You know, we've all of us in the space, whether it be PodTrack, whether it be Gigavox, whether it be any other of the other companies that are out there that are dealing with media, and some of the other companies that are doing advertising within podcasting, I'm thinking to myself, we've all been pretty much been using the standard. Now, those of you that haven't been with the show a long time, you may not know this, but in early 2005, this show was the first show to have a nationally recognized sponsor, which was GoDaddy. Then I nurtured that relationship and brought the Tech Podcast Network and being a big sponsorship buy for multiple shows, which expanded out into other companies that have been long-term sponsors with us. And part of the reason those companies are long-term sponsors with us is from the very get-go, we were very, very cognizant of the fact that we needed to make sure that what we reported on download numbers was very, very accurate. In that, I didn't care if the number's 1 or 100,000, as long as we knew what the actual number was, we would be fine. And we come up with our own set of standards. Now, Kevin Devin developed the application called PodStats that we used initially to do measurement of the number of downloads. That tool has eventually been kind of replaced. We're using some other stuff now. But we set the standards for a lot of people. And a lot of companies follow the standards that I essentially set up in this space. Now, you know, I'm sure there's derivatives of that. But at the same time, you know, I wake up this morning, I get this announcement, this, you know, all of a sudden this new group is being formed because they have to set these standards. I'm thinking, what? And my first reaction was not necessarily positive. And while I want to look at this in an open mind, I was kind of disappointed that obviously that they didn't include us in any of the initial talks. Now, I guess it's been all in formation discussions, which is fine. But if you want to find out yourself more about this, you can go to downloadablemedia.org and check it out. And they're going to make individual memberships available for $150. Corporate memberships are going to be $1,000, which I think is pretty steep on both sides of the fence for individuals and for the corporate members, especially if this is going to be, this should be a nonprofit. I hope they're going to have this as a nonprofit. A nonprofit group. It should not be, you know, need to have big fees because there shouldn't be, someone should not be getting paid on this. It should be all voluntary. If you get paid, you may like get paid a penny or something like that per meeting or whatever it may be. But anyway, I'm going to be watching this. I haven't fully decided where I fall on the side of the fence. I do have some reservations in this type of a group in that it, again, it drives, it can have a tendency to, it could stifle innovation. It could force people to report things that, you know, maybe they don't necessarily want to force. So we're going to have to be very, very careful to see how the structure of this is and what ideas are brought forth and if there's any agendas. There's always agendas in this kind of stuff. So we'll see. Right, and moving on here, and I'm sorry, I should have brought that up in the beginning of the show, but I had it in the middle of the stack here, and it just fell where it fell. So, okay, next up, Windows Home Server has been released to manufacturing, so that's good news. And as you all know, I've been beta testing the Windows Home Server here for a while, and even though I had issues getting the second release installed on my box here that I've been really using, I'm really excited about this product, and I'm probably more excited about Windows Home Server than I am about Vista. And I'm very serious when I say that, in that those of you that are primarily Windows users, this is going to be the product of the year that you're going to want to look at. Now, if you have a single machine, it may not be worth it to do it. But if you've got a few machines around your house like I do, and kids that do stupid things with the machines, you know, whatever it may be, you're going to want to look at this. The simple ability to restore a computer on the fly, that's the best thing. You take in, let's say, you know, I had this HP, went belly up, the hard drive blew in it. I knew the hard drive was going. Essentially, you know, I heard it jangling around. So I had a spare drive here. So I said, well, what a way to test this thing. I shut the machine down. I pulled the hard drive out of it. I put a raw hard drive in with nothing on it, stuck it in, put the boot disk, the special disk that the Windows Home Server application comes on, I put that in the CD-ROM drive. I booted from CD-ROM. When this thing booted up, it says, hey, do we need to restore a computer? I said, yes, we do. Did a few couple of things real quick with it, hit restore, walked away. 2 hours later, I had a completely rebuilt machine back to the base point of what it was when I left it that morning. How many of you have rebuilt a Windows machine from scratch and took a whole weekend to do it? I've done a few. I'm not doing any more. Ever, 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 ever again. So I will be buying Windows Home Server. I want to buy the HP unit. It looks real nice. It's small. It'll go somewhere where I don't have to worry about it. I can plug it in. As long as it's got an Ethernet connection and power, you're good to go. And this thing will sit there and almost run itself. And you can stick four drives in it. I got four brand new drives here ready. I'm ready, folks, for this thing to come out. Now, we'll see. You can run. I think they're going to make it available so you can run your own hardware. But I'm just going to buy the device if it isn't too outrageously expensive, because I can use that machine. I've been using a test machine for something else. Okay, let's move on. I'm sure you're excited about that product. I know that I am. How many of you are Lego fans? Just real quick, I'm going to provide you a link in the show notes to the ultimate Lego aircraft carrier. When you see this, you're going to be shocked. You really are. Some people have way too much time on their hands. All right, there's a survey done, and it's reported by ZDNet that they're saying that 33% of the people that have been polled plan to buy an iPhone. That is simply remarkable. That's some remarkable numbers here. It said 32% of those who do not currently own an iPhone stated that they do intend to purchase one, with 8% planning to purchase in the next 3 months and 22% planning to purchase sometime in the future. And the respondents' age were 44 and under. And it said 40% of the respondents were 18 to 24. So this is unheard of type of numbers on a product. This has got to make the folks at Apple smile. I just wish they weren't on that AT&T. Oh, gosh, that's the thing that makes me the most mad. All right, over on franticindustries.com, if you are a Pounce, Twitter, Jaku, and Tumblr fan, yes, you can now post to all four at the same time. So if you're doing this mini blogging, web IM services, you know, there's no sense in updating them all separately. You can do it with one time. You will be able to, if you follow the instructions on this website, it's going to save you a lot of time, heartache, and you'll be able to be represented at all four locations. So have the link to this up in the show notes. All right. Normally, I would not talk about this type of an article, but it intrigued me quite a little bit. It's a PodTech video program. It's called Secret SEO Tricks Behind TechCrunch. And there's a gentleman by the name of Neil Patel. He has a company called ACS Consulting. And he is a search engine optimizer. And he doubled TechCrunch's traffic through search engine optimization. And they Jennifer Jones interviewed this guy for her Marketing Voices show. And this is interesting. This is a very interesting video. It's about 10 minutes. And, to double somebody's traffic just through search engine optimization is pretty amazing to me. I think, we try to do a real, real good job at Raw Voice and make sure our sites are optimized. But I'm sure there's a lot more we could do. Is there anyone out there that is a search engine optimization wizard? Do you claim that as a trade? Do you get paid to do that? Love to hear from you if you do. Geeknews@gmail.com. I'm a startup that's bootstrapping. Don't have a lot of money, but boy, you can make a name for yourself if you want to work with us. I'm sure there's a lot of people that want some free search engine optimization help. But if you're an SEO specialist, I'd love to talk to you. Give me a jingle. Geeknews@gmail.com. All right, how many of you are using online bill paying systems? I'm sure many of you are, and probably through your bank. And I know that I've been a big online bill paying user for many, many years. But there's a new website out that, and I fully don't understand what the need for this is. It's called Billeo, B-I-L-L-E-O, and it's over at Billeo.com. And this is a bill pay toolbar that makes making payments and even online shopping a little easier. The toolbar works in both IE and Firefox, and it stores your payment credentials, payment receipts, and reminds you when bills are coming due through an alert flag and email system. So the question is, how many of you are happy then with your online banking? Do you get reminders? Are you on auto pay? Do you set stuff up and forget it? That's what I do. You know, I haven't paid an American Express bill in years simply because I have it just set up to auto pay. Now I have to keep an eye on it if, you know, if my wife gets a little crazy. Of course, it's always my wife that gets crazy with Amex, right? So I have to keep an eye on how much the payment's going to be, but it's automatically done. I don't have to ever worry about having a late bill. I get reminders and stuff already through my current bank. How many of you are on a, you know, have a good payment system? Why would you need this? Does your bank not offer these type of services that Billeo is providing? And maybe, and if it doesn't, maybe this is a service for you. So I'll have a link up to their website in the show notes. All right, for those of you that like desktop type applications, you know, many of you probably have an instant manager or instant message client on your desktop. There's a new a desktop client called PalTalk. And I guess they've been around for a while, but they've been adding some new features to their chat client, and it's called Screening Rooms. Screening Rooms add video streams to special PalTalk chat rooms where up to 5,000 people can watch videos simultaneously and chat about what's going on. It's kind of like Kite.tv, but it's built on a desktop client. I think I've heard, you know, maybe I heard about this once before, but you can add pals, you can invite, you can go into rooms, you can have a private one-on-one video conversations, and I think it's pretty cool that you can actually pre-record videos now and place them on there so people can go and review them. Now, one thing it's going to do is it will launch content from Mania TV, Heavy.com, Blip.tv, and Rip.tv, and people can also upload their own personal videos as well. So check that out, paltalk.com. There's a very interesting video by a gentleman down in Israel. But I think the thing that's real interesting about this video is actually the player that they're using. It's called Five Men, and I believe it's at fivemen.com. And this video is actually talking about how to raise money from VCs. But I think what intrigued me and what also intrigued Duncan Riley over at TechCrunch was the way that they were able to fade in and fade out different techs and some things that they've got going on with this player. So if you're looking for a little different player, check out fivemen.com. I have a link up to the actual video where this guy's talking about this, but I think if you watch the video and watch the player, you'll see how powerful this thing really is. And I was intrigued, definitely was. There's a lot of cool things going on out there in the actual video player space, and it's getting more creative every day. If you're looking for more stats for any site, Xinyu, X-I-N-U, and it's actually not located at Xinyu.com because that's where I went first to find it. Xinyu is a service that provides comprehensive overview of page statistics and data that leaves cookie-cutter sites such as Vapori, it kind of smoke checks them. It really does. Now, when I went and went to the actual link, and it's at like www.visayo2k3.net, obviously this is a beta site, but you put in your URL to your website, and it brings you up your Google PageRank, your TechNorady rank, it brings up your Alexa rank, your DMOZ listing, talks about how many index pages you have, looks how many backlinks, it's got how many social bookmarks are coming in, syndication type numbers, it looks at diagnosis of your website for how many URLs are bad, it talks about just all kinds of good data on a website, provides screenshots and different browsers, all kinds of cool stuff here. Now, again, the website was down when I went to it. I have a link up in the show notes. I hope it's back up by the time you guys get the, go looking at the different links. But this is really cool. So you can quickly check your PageRank backlinks and much, much more at Xinyu, X-I-N-U. Again, not at Xinyu.com, but I'll have the link to the website in the show notes. Looks like NASA is on the move here on a lot of the contracts that are going to be signed for the jump to go back to the moon. NASA signed a $1.2 billion, now that's with a B, contract with Pratt & Whitney Rocketdyne to develop the J2X engine. And they're saying that the U.S. Space Agency needs the power of the upper stage of its Ares 1 launch vehicle and Ares V heavy lift rocket. So they're actually working here. Actually, I guess this is not only for the moon stuff, but it's also for the booster that's going to be launching the new NASA capsule-based space shuttle successor. It's called the Orion Crew Exploration Vehicle into low Earth orbit. It says, oh, yeah. And the largest Ares V, meanwhile, is slated to haul heftier payloads into space, such as cargo and the rocket engine stages for moon-bound missions. Lunar landers and other hardware. So, looks like they're putting a lot of money into the lift technology, and you know that's what it's all about. Getting you need these heavy lift rockets to get these payloads into space. And they've got a sample here on the website that shows the planned stack up of the new rockets, and you know just basically shows you the mock up of what's to come here in the future with our next space vehicles. All right, over on the Wall Street Journal, Walt Mossberg. Boy, this guy, he gets some major hardware. He gets to play with all the cool stuff. He was able to get two laptops. They're real mini in size. And they kind of something I've been looking for, too, is a real mini laptop. And the one that intrigued me the most, believe it or not, is a Dell. He had a pretty good reveal on a Dell XPS M1330. It's relatively small, and it's larger than the Toshiba that he reviewed. And it has a pretty good screen, and he feels that durability looks pretty good. And the key thing is small. Price range on it is a little bit more than I'd like to spend, but it's definitely cheaper than the Toshiba that he reviewed. If you have recently bought a small laptop to travel with, I'd love to hear what you've bought and what you think about it. I'm still looking to ultimately buy a ultra mobile PC, something one of those that are almost small enough to sit and put in your pocket, but those are really, really pricey. They really are. Okay, I want to welcome the Engaging Brand Podcast over to the Podcaster News website. She has, Anna has been podcasting for a while. She had had some issues on her where she had been hosting her media, and she was kind of in a jam. So we said, hey, I'm more than happy to essentially host all your media and take care of your hosting needs for you. So she has moved her podcast over to podcasternews.com. So if you get a chance, go over and check her show out. It's a great show. It's called the Engaging Brand Podcast. And we look forward to having Anna on board and having her shows add to the availability of content over there. And if you're looking to do some short show form content, we'd love to have you over at Podcaster News. We take care of all the hosting for you. And generally, we're looking for podcasters that want to make short format shows, 10 minutes or less. We do, on a case-by-case basis, take podcasters that have longer content. But feel free to apply over at podcasternews.com. Those of you that have iPhones, well, the version 1.0 bug list is out, and there's like 68 bugs that they found, which isn't, I guess, for a product that's new to market, is not too bad. Most of it is UI usability issues, nothing that is very, very serious. There are some crash issues. But if you want to see all the bugs, I'll have the link up. It's over at the applehound.com website. Found a very, very cool new notebook cooler. And this one here is way different than anything I've seen before. And it's not available yet. It's called the Cooler Master NotePal Infinite Cool. It's kind of a Cooler Master's NotePal. I guess that's the short term for it. I'm reading the title off the blog post. But this thing has a fan type system that blows evenly up through the bottom. And it's angled. It's much different than anything I've seen thus far. And they're claiming that it cools your laptop by as much as 60 degrees. Definitely think I'm going to check out one of those. The folks over at alltunes.com, remember that is kind of the same folks that were part of all of MP3, but they won a judgment within Russia against, Visa International over its decision to disconnect the online music store's payment system. They're saying here that this ruling that was made in Moscow was that Visa was not, they could stop having them as a vendor, but the reason they couldn't stop them from being a vendor was because someone's accusing them of doing something illegal. And even though the courts found that this company wasn't doing anything illegal, you know, it's just basically a back and forth between these two groups. Now, I don't know what it's going to do to improve their availability of being able to have Visa merchant services here. I highly doubt that Visa is going to do anything. But this ruling found that Visa had acted illegally by not fulfilling its business agreement it had with Altoons. So this is kind of an interesting twist here. So we'll see what the IFPI has to say on the Russian court decision. Next up, there's a article out saying that government power agencies are warning that conventional energy sources are not going to be able to keep up with the rising demand over the next 25 years and are heavily recommending investment in alternative energy sources, primarily solar. So this is a warning by the petroleum industry that they're not going to be able to keep up. And that, I've lived in a place that has had rolling blackouts. When I lived in Guam, every day we would lose power 4 to 8 hours. And this is because they did not, it wasn't because of the not having enough fuel. It was simply because there was not enough generating capacity on the island, and that the growth rate of energy needs completely outgrew their ability to serve the populace with energy. And it really sucked. It really did. You know, you'd come home and it was never predictable. But I would get home, start cooking some food, and all of a sudden the juice would go out. And you'd have something half-cooked or whatever you were in the middle of, and the power was out for the next 4 hours. Or you'd wake up in the morning and, you know, everything was silent because, you were in another blackout period. It was terrible. And I think most people in this country, you know, you think about last time you had no juice in your house, and there was something for a storm or whatever, but how would you like to have rolling blackouts every day? And this is the type of stuff that happens in third world countries where people are used to having rolling power outages. Now, sure, you can offset that with generation capacity within your own home, but you got to be able to have petroleum available at a reasonable price to run it. So, we could be headed to the point where we're regulated I guess that's the right word, to essentially becoming almost a third world country by not having enough electrical power capacity in this country. It's pretty scary. It really is. So hopefully all this investment that's being made in solar is going to make a difference. Okay, I've got a bunch more stuff here. I'm definitely not going to have time to get through it tonight. There's some stuff I got on CDN. More CDN competitors are coming on board. I'm glad to see this happen because most of the CDNs, and what a CDN is a content delivery network like Akamai or Limelight Networks. You know, very, very expensive to be on their services. And they're saying some other companies are looking to enter the space in the United States. I'm very happy to see that forthcoming. Great article by Dan Farber and Larry Dingen on Fios, talking about stupid Fios broadband tricks. And I think once you see the speed that they've been able to achieve once they got signed up for the Fios service, I think you'll be very jealous if you don't have it already. In the space news, the astronauts arrived for practice countdown at the Cape. So we're a few weeks away from the next shuttle launch. I think we're about 3 weeks away, so look forward to that. There's also a rumor going around right now that a hacker has unlocked Microsoft's DRM platform, so I'll have a link up to that in the show notes, and a great article on CNNMoney.com talking about Google knowing all or close enough to raise concerns, and this basically, you know, goes over some of the stuff I've already talked about with Google knowing absolutely everything about you based upon all the interconnecting services that they have and what you're searching for and what you're buying and everything else that goes into building up data on individuals' usage habits. Some very, very scary things on the privacy side there. Good article by CNNMoney.com. And if you're an iPhone user and you've been using the wireless capability to connect to Wi-Fi networks, it's already starting to be issues on some universities. Duke University has had just been slammed by the number of iPhones that have been flooding their Wi-Fi network. So they're working with Apple to try to alleviate that issue, and they're also working with Cisco to try to determine a workaround. But if the iPhones are starting to disrupt Wi-Fi availability at universities and different businesses, how long will it be before there's a iPhone clampdown for those of you that are using that, the Wi-Fi applications? All right, let me go ahead. We're already long here. Let me go ahead and play the voicemail comment. I definitely want to play Derek's song here at the end of the show. So let's go ahead and get into the voicemail comment. As always, you can send comments to geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365.
Hey, Todd. Brian in New York.
Hey, Brian.
The open broadband access for 700 megahertz spectrum. Oh, yeah, you're right. It is going to be a war. But I think the telcos don't even want a war. They probably are going to do everything they can to keep this really on the back burner so people don't even know what they're missing. I can hear the politicians now already after they've been greased by the telcos. Something like, oh, American people need to understand this truly open broadband access will create a dangerous internet breeding ground for child pornographers and terrorist activity. U.S. citizens need a kind of regulation and safety that only a large private corporation can provide. Some kind of nonsense like that. I don't know. I'd like to see this one on C-SPAN, see him talk about this. Now, as far as the infrared toilet tissue dispenser, toilet humor, that's a new low for Geek News Central, Todd. No, really, I got mixed feelings about it. You see, on the one hand, I think I could see myself standing around twirling my thumbs waiting for my girlfriend to use a public ladies' room, waiting because she's waiting for her tissue to be dispensed. But on the other hand, there's people like my brother-in-law who can go through a whole roll of tissue in no time. And I always seem to end up plunging after him. Which makes me think maybe I should... might not be a bad idea to get one of those things installed in my place. But maybe the thing to do is we should start up a portable, or start designing a portable pocket tissue dispenser. It doubles as an MP3 player and voice recorder. Or leave the voice recorder part off of it, maybe.
Oh,
maybe
man.
A better idea. all right. Great show. I just listened to it and had the day off. So I'm looking forward to the next one, see what happens. So that's really, I'm really psyched, though, about that open broadband access. That would be really great. So let's keep an eye on that. All right. Looking forward to the show.
Dude, you need to do a show, man. Very funny. Very, very funny. I appreciate the feedback. I loved it. hey, send me your email. Send me your email address and actually your mailing address. My friend, I'm going to send you a $50 gift certificate. Yeah, that just made my day. That really did. That voicemail was very, very funny. Oh, gosh. I knew someone was going to be able to come up with some good humor here. So congratulations on that, and thanks for calling in. All right, I got just a stack here. I got an email from Frank T. I want to thank you for your comments on the AT&T spying issue and the iPhone. I want to thank Jeff for some of his Sprint shenanigans. I want to thank Bill on the ISP snooping. I want to thank Matthew out of Melbourne for saying, hey, Todd, just let you know when you link to my site how much traffic it sent me. Hey, thanks. I'm glad you got some traffic over there. Appreciate the feedback on that. I got an email from John, And he says, hey, Todd, here's a bizarre thought for you, Google and Sprint. What if Google were to acquire Sprint? That would give them the killer combo. Google has been buying up huge bandwidth pipes. Now acquire a wireless telco with a good wireless data network. Add in good apps, especially for a browser. Makes me think. Then fix customer service. I'd join, I'd get the data plan, a Skype account, and put the laptop in my truck. Run maps with this GPS, check traffic, check email, communicate with clients, even talk on the computer with a Bluetooth headset. Sprint might be right for the picking. Google has the money. Google iPhone on Google Net or Google Talk or iTalk. Nobody gets customer service, not AT&T, nor Verizon, not Sprint, no data with T-Mobile. Microsoft can make the same play. Google has more going for it, in my opinion. John out of Lakewood. Hey, John, great idea. I tell you, if Google buys Sprint, I hope they give you some money for that idea. Okay, got an email from Andrew, and he linked me to that crazy guy that flew 200 miles in his lawn chair. I thought I talked about this in the last show. If I didn't, I'll have the link up in the show notes tonight. And thanks, Andrew, for your YouTube link. I'll have that up as well. Got an email from Fraser. Hey, Todd, was wondering if you could point me in the right direction. I'm looking for some kind of software product that lets you build podcasts from a script. You define the intros, ads, body, close, etc. from MP3 chunks, and then it builds the final MP3. That way you get a new advertiser, recompile all your MP3s, and be able to serve ads across all your shows. Any ideas? Fraser, I tell you what, go over to gigavox.com. They've got an online application. It'll do just that for you. You actually can upload the raw wave files, I believe, is what they take. And maybe you can do MP3s, but check it out, and it'll do exactly what you do. My show format here doesn't work to do that. Some people it will, because I just basically do an end-to-end on mine, and I don't have time to cut that up. It just adds too much production time to the show. But if you're looking to rebuild your shows on the fly, definitely go over to gigavox.com. They've got a service over there that help you. Got an email from Michael. Hey, Todd, one option I presumed someone would have mentioned, but I guess did not, was a prepaid option. You can activate an iPhone in a prepaid mode, which allow you to use it. This is true. We could do that. He says, I did pick up an 8G iPhone last week, and while there are some problems with it, I'm very impressed with the 1.0 release, and the few complaints I have will be resolved with a future update. And he's got some more comments here as well, where he's disappointed with the SDK and the development method, but overall very, very happy with it. Got an email from Christian. He says, hey, Todd, they need to get rid of, this is on Linux. He says, hey, Todd, they need to get rid of the text files that you have to edit whenever you want to do something advanced. A GUI app should have full option windows, not text files. And this is about Linux adoption by people. Got an email from Dave, and he is giving me some feedback on OneNote, and I definitely appreciate that. He says, Todd, I give up. I must be doing something wrong. I've been trying to post feedback on the OneNote web exporter. You know what? If you're having problems leaving comments, I apologize about that. I do have everything set to be reviewed, so I think I went through and approved all the comments today. And if it didn't get up there, I'll definitely check that out as well. He says, by the way, the question was that I've got a woefully underused 2003 version of OneNote, and the exporter tool calls out for OneNote 2007. Which version of OneNote are you using? I don't even know. I'll have to look. I'm assuming I have 2003. So if the exporter requires 2007, I'll be out of luck too. He says, hey, Todd, this is the next one's from Bert. He says, I'm one of your Down Under listeners, and I have what is probably a very best basic question that I hope that you may be able to find the time to answer. I can put together a podcast, but I don't know what to do then, specifically how to do the RSS code or whatever, and how do I get it out to the public? What are the steps to begin production and public availability? Hey, Bert, I'll be sending you an email to give you some info. Maybe we can get you up on our private beta for our publishing system and give you some options to get you started there. So I'll let you know on that here very directly. I have your email flagged. I got one that I want to read here. We're going to go long, and this is from Adam, and this is a negative feedback to the show. He said, okay, I used to listen to your podcast. Heck, I even bought your book. I wouldn't mind getting into podcasting at some point, but I just haven't found the right show topic format yet. I still get your RSS feed and check it every now and then. You did point me to a few cool articles and websites, so it's worth checking back. I quit listening to your podcast because I heard several stories with misleading or inaccurate information. I would like to point you at this recent story, and it's one about AT&T. And this is a story about AT&T seeking content for its TV service and the LA Times' knee-jerk sensational approach to reporting the news. There was a follow-up I've not been able to find in which an AT&T person said that the technology had not been designed or implemented. AT&T wants to add content to the U-verse TV offering, U-verse's IPTV. How do we know that all this isn't just about Viacom being afraid of the U-verse box that would be hacked and HD content streamed back out to the internet the way it came in? AT&T would have been speaking to Viacom as a TV content provider, not as an ISP or phone provider. If we use LA Times logic, how do we know that the technology will not monitor voice calls to make sure there is no talk about pirated movies? Wouldn't that make about as much sense as trying to monitor the internet traffic? Does your cable company deal with the MPAA? Is your cable box or TiVo monitored to make sure it's hacked? Does that affect your privacy? He says, sensationalism is rampant in journalism. Everything is an attempt to an attention grab. If your content is good, people will follow you. This type of thing doesn't help anyone. AT&T to spy and report directly to the MPAA and RIAA. You know, Adam, this is an article that not only the LA Times reported on, but multiple reporting venues. Just because I linked to this one specific article in the actual show does not mean that wasn't covered by other people. AT&T has come out and said that they are going to report heavy peer-to-peer users to the MPAA and RIAA as copyright violators, as potential copyright violators. This is exactly what they're going to do. Now, maybe the LA Times story wasn't about that, but it was not speculation. This is what AT&T said, and there's been widespread coverage on this. So I don't believe I was being a sensationalist in this. Now, I respect your right to go and listen to other podcasts, and I respect your opinion on this, but I think you're off base with my comments. If the rest of you think I'm not off base, or if I am off base, I'd love to hear your feedback as well. Geeknews@gmail.com. Call the voicemail hotline, 619-342-7365. Fire away at me if you would. We're definitely long. I definitely want to play Eric's music here. So I'm going to go ahead and end with that. If you get a chance, go over to Derek's website at penmachine.com. I'll have the link in the show notes. Appreciate you all being part of the Ohana here, being part of the family. And, of course, stay subscribed. Tell your friends about the show. And send feedback, geeknews@gmail.com again. All right, here's a track out of off Derek's CD. It's his actual album is Pen Machine Sessions, and he said it's the track number 6. Had a plan, had to change it. I'll give the CD away on the next show. awesome track. And that was Derek K. Miller, Pen Machine Sessions, penmachine.com. All right, folks, we'll see you next show. Aloha.